Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
let me just play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Pittsburgh fans, sports aficionados, we welcome you to another edition of the Black and Gold Blitz from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. I am your host this evening, Christopher Carter, and always with me, the Commander-in-Chief, the lead editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, Jeff Hartman. Jeff, how are you doing this Thursday evening?
Pretty good, man. We have a lot to talk about and a lot of Penguins talk, but we're going to be talking about all three sports, Penguins, Pirates, and Steelers. But I had a question for you, Chris, right off the bat. I wanted to see if you wanted to do things a little bit different tonight. Everyone knows what happens in the Penguins game. Everyone knows about the Pirates and the Steelers. Let's give straight opinion, straight commentary. Let's get some banter and see what that turns out to be. I think that's going to be better off because – we know now that the Penguins are 2-0. I want to get right off the bat with the accusations of Sidney Crosby cheating. I know you're probably pretty heated about it. What did you think when you heard of Couture saying of the San Jose Sharks that Sidney Crosby cheats at the face-off circle?
You know what's funny? I'm not even heated about it. I like it. It's obvious that – I like it because the San Jose Sharks – they're going to be too busy focused on that. The Penguins are in their heads. I don't like that Sidney Crosby's being accused of being a cheater because it's not like we don't get that enough in Pittsburgh. You know, we just wrote about the article about how people still complain about Super Bowl 40 and what did or didn't happen with the referees in that game 10 years ago now. But, I mean, Sidney Crosby does what every center does or any person that ever gets in a face-off circle in the NHL. Logan Couture, he came out, he said that, Sidney Crosby cheats because he tries to anticipate the puck drop and the referees don't call him enough for it. Well, to me, one, that doesn't sound like Sidney Crosby's cheating, because if you watch hockey if you play hockey like Couture does, you know that anyone that's in a faceoff circle is trying to anticipate it because you want to win those faceoffs and get your team the best opportunity to get possession and get a goal. But when you're looking at this, it's like, if you want to be mad at that, that's something you got to be mad at the refs for. But, I don't even care about all that. I know this much. If it's gotten to his head enough that he's bringing it up, to the media, they got some thinking to do on the other side over there. And the Penguins, they're already in the driver's seat at 2-0. If this Sharks team can't get it together and get the focus on winning instead of whether or not Sidney Crosby gets kicked out of the faceoff circle once in a while, then I think the journey to get two more wins to get the team's fourth Stanley Cup championship are going to be that much easier. But Jeff, are you teed off about this?
Man, not as much as you might think. For me, I look at it and I think that the gripe is not about Sidney Crosby. The gripe is about the officials, because
right.
The official that's dropping the puck, if he's cheating, he needs to toss him out. Now, Couture's saying, because he's Sidney Crosby, I use air quotes there, that he's not going to throw him out based off reputation. And that could be the case. But at the same time, like you said, every single face-off man in the NHL is doing exactly this. They're anticipating the drop, and if they do that well enough, they're going to win the majority of their draws, like Crosby did. He won 17, only lost 7. in game two. I think that this is kind of like the underlying theme here is that the San Jose Sharks have bigger issues. You're down 2-0, and honestly, if what you're worried about is Sidney Crosby at the faceoff circle, maybe you should be worried about covering Connor Sheary in the high slot in overtime. Maybe you should be worried about the fact that the Penguins have outskated, been totally dominant outside of maybe like 5 minutes in each game. Maybe that's what you should be worried about. This, to me, is going to give Pittsburgh fuel to their fire. If anything, it's going to give Crosby fuel. And he doesn't need any more. The guy's already all over the place. I mean, we've seen Crosby be dominant before, especially when he came into the league. It's different now. Teams know what he's about. They study him. They game plan for him. And he is still sticking it to them. And it's not always going to show up on the stat sheet. But this is going to add fuel. It's going to motivate him. And is that really what you want to do for the San Jose Sharks? Because my feeling is if the Pittsburgh Penguins go into San Jose and split, win one, lose one, they're in the driver's seat. They're going to be a 3-1 coming back to Pittsburgh with a chance to ice it out. And no pun intended. I really honestly think that this is a great situation for Pittsburgh. Couture should not have opened his mouth. It kind of reminds me, except the result I hope is different, when Joey Porter ran his mouth prior to the 2005 divisional game against the Colts. There's that classic scene where it's Tony Dungy and Bill Cowher at midfield before the game, and Cowher's talking to him. He's, the one thing I told my guys is just keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joey Porter goes off calling him soft. And I was like, Joey, I kind of feel like the San Jose Sharks have got to be saying, what the hell are you doing? Why would you say that? Why would you call him out? In the words of Seinfeld, that's not good for business, and it's not good for anything, I don't think, for the San Jose Sharks. And it's kind of a non-story. I listen to XM Radio a lot, listen to NHL Network, and they kind of laughed it off. But it's kind of a non-story, but it is a story. I think that this type of stuff is bulletin board material, has motivational strategies, and in the sport of hockey, those guys listen to that stuff. So do you think this is going to have any type of swing, tactics, momentum, all that stuff, any difference in the actual game on Saturday night?
I don't think so. I think we've seen a serious a lot of maturity out of Crosby lately. You saw with he took a punch to the back of the head and a cross chest to the back last night, both of which were, uncalled for, could have been penalized, were missed by the referees. They knocked his helmet off. He just smiled, picked his helmet up, and kept playing. He wasn't Crosby of old. He wasn't even like a normal hockey player. Most hockey players turn around and swing their stick at you and make the mistake of getting drawn for a penalty and then hurting their team. And Crosby's done that in the past. But this time he was just, we're in control of this game. Well, I'm not giving you the satisfaction of responding and possibly drawing a penalty and hurting my team. And I think it's going to be the same thing with this. I'm pretty sure he's looking at that like, whatever, you can say whatever you want. I'm going to keep doing face-off the way I've done face-off. Like he got that face-off overtime win that got the puck to the tank, who got the assist to Sheary, who scored the game-winning goal. So, they can do whatever they want. If anything, if you're the coach for the Sharks, I do think you want to talk to the 27-year-old Couture and say, look, man, like we're getting our butts kicked already. We don't need you adding to their fire. You know what I'm saying? The thing was with Porter's thing back in the 2005 playoffs, it made sense because the Colts came out for the first half thinking the Steelers were going to pounding ground them with the bus and Willie Parker and try to ground the game out. But what the Steelers came out with was play action, first down passing, trying to keep them off balance, and it worked. Then Roethlisberger was able to lead two early touchdown drives, and that was the lead that the Steelers defended the entire game. And in that way, I think that Joey Porter's thing was a bit strategic. This, however, what are you trying to tell Crosby? Not to do face-offs as well as he does? To go harder in face-offs? I don't think there's any strategy there. I think this is just – he was frustrated. And dealing with reporters, you're going to get frustrated when you're losing and you're in the championship and you've been working on your whole life to get to this point and now you're down 0-2. But you gotta not put yourself in that situation, in my opinion. But like I said, as a Penguins fan, I love it. Let them be in your head. I don't know if you saw this, Jeff, but there was like a good film of the isolated Crosby cam that follows him around for the game. He drew up that play at the end of the game, and I thought that was so cool. You see him talking to the players, telling them, like, look, I'm going to go for this. Let's set up for this. Let's try to get this done. And you know, that kind of stuff. That's greatness. That's what leaders do. And not that we haven't seen Crosby lead in the past, but it's like it's that kind of coordination that you want to see out of your ace. You know, when you're in these Stanley Cup runs, and that's the kind of stuff that if the Penguins can win this year, you know that he's gonna it can add to his resume as a legend. So, you know, I don't think it'll have any particular impact simply because I think Crosby's beyond the point where it's going to impact him. If the Penguins were down, maybe. But I feel like Crosby, he's been in the league long enough. He knows the game well enough that to know that the Penguins love the way that this series is going. Why would they change anything? So they're not going to change anything. What about you? Do you think it's going to change anything?
I don't think it's going to change anything. I think that Mike Sullivan has a really good grasp on this hockey team. I think that they listen to him. They follow his lead. And he's definitely been one of these guys, one of these coaches that, in my opinion, is rare in professional sports. And that is a coach that speaks and the players follow. And I think about Mike Tomlin in the same sense. They're not necessarily players' coaches all the time. They might get tabbed as players' coaches, but they're coaches that players like to play for. But most importantly, they like to listen. They follow their lead. That's what's important. But I wanted to go off on a segment here a little bit, Chris. I know you won't mind. And it's kind of a thank you to the National Hockey League. Anyone that remembers the beginning of the Penguin season, it was rough. They came out of the gate slow. It ended up in Mike Johnson or John getting fired, the former coach. I called him the elf on the shelf. That's what he looked like to me. And Sidney Crosby was playing poorly. It wasn't good, and a lot of people were questioning him. Was he injured, stuff like that. I want to thank the National Hockey League. I want to thank the voters for the All-Star game especially for not voting Sidney Crosby into the All-Star game. Now, Chris, you might be sitting here thinking, where the hell is he going with this? But listen to me. Hear me out. When he did not get voted into the All-Star game based on reputation alone, don't think that didn't make an impact on him. A couple things. Number one, it gave him a full weekend off, which I think actually made a big deal with him. I think he was kind of tired. He was kind of burnt out a little bit. It gave him a full weekend off, like a long break, an extended break. But I think, if anything, it fueled him. I think he was sitting there thinking, are you serious? I've won a Stanley Cup. I've won how many gold medals now? And you're not even going to invite me to the All-Star game? And it's almost like he said to himself, game on then. That's fine. And after the All-Star break, he went on that tremendous tear. I wish I had the statistics in front of me of just how dominant he was March and on. And that was when the Penguins started coming on strong. That's when, obviously, the new coach Sullivan was brought in. The Wilkes-Barre Scranton boys came up. The HBK line was formed. And it just seemed like from that, and it was all led from Crosby. I'm not naive enough to think that other pieces weren't in play there, but don't underestimate the importance of Sidney Crosby to the Penguins. And like I said, it might not always be in the stat sheet, but when he's playing like a man possessed, like he has been playing for the past three games, or actually four games, going back to game six against the Tampa Bay Lightning, it is a different Penguins team, period. And so I'd like to thank the NHL for that, because I don't know if he would have been in that All-Star game. I'm not sure. I'm sure he would have turned his game around. I don't know if that wasn't just like the ignition. You think about a gas grill, you know. You throw that match in there and then, boom, it just ignites. I wouldn't be surprised if that was like the match that just completely stoked Crosby's fire and just absolutely set him off. So a big thank you to that, because I think that this team wouldn't be where they are if Crosby doesn't turn his game around. I think that's what got it started. I might be crazy, Chris, but that's just my personal thought.
I don't think you're crazy. I do think that something like that. Crosby is a very competitive guy. You know, he knows his value, and I think he might have taken it to heart, because he's like, you know, you're right. I'm Sidney goddamn Crosby. Like, what the hell? You know, he's the best player in the NHL. When he's at his best, there's no one that can say that they're better than him. You know, he's had his stretches where he hasn't played at his best, and I think that has impacted his. And I think that's ultimately what, you know, the voters might have been saying, is that, look, you know, you're not the same guy that, you know, has kicked everyone's butts for how many years he's been in the league. But, I mean, you know, he's still Sidney Crosby. You know, it's like Tom Brady has an average year. He'll still make the Pro Bowl because people vote for Tom Brady. You know, and this, and I think you see that a lot in the NFL, especially like with a line like Joe Thomas, you know, the left tackle for the Browns has, you know, has that reputation of being a great offensive tackle, and not that he has the reputation of Sidney Crosby or has ever won a championship, but it's his name that gets in every year, even when he has a good bad season. I mean, I watch Joe Thomas get his butt whooped, you know, nowadays, but people still just know him because he's been a really a great lineman for a long time. So I think that he recognized that, and that had an impact. But I also think that the way that Sullivan has turned this team around, this just hearing him talk about, well, you know, we're not going to focus on the penalties. We're going to focus on what we can control. We're not going to be like the Penguins of old that lose their mind over things like that. You know, those kind of things stick out to me. And I think that mentality has seeped into Crosby, and I think that's what we're seeing out of him, on top of the whole, you know, I have to prove myself because no one else believes in me these days. So that's where I stand on that. But yeah.
Well, you know, I wanted to say one more thing, and I want to get your take on it because I know you watch the Penguins as much as I do. A lot of people, this is going to sound like a jerk, and maybe it's because I'm kind of a perfectionist with certain things. To be totally honest with you, I've been very disappointed in Evgeny Malkin. I think that other superstars, the big names on the team, Crosby, we've already talked about him, Letang, even Olli Maatta's played better, Ben Lovejoy's playing out of his mind, Ian Cole, all these players are contributing. And a lot of people were really heavy on the praise for Evgeny Malkin after last night's game. I'm sorry. Maybe I expect more. Maybe it's that I'm expecting the 2009 Conn Smythe Trophy winner in terms of Evgeny Malkin's performance. But I'm just not seeing it from him. And maybe it's in line mate, and he is playing with Kunitz and Russ. Those aren't bad line mates. Those guys are putting the puck on net. They're doing their job. What is your take on Malkin? Because I'm unbelievably disappointed with him so far this entire postseason. And maybe he's hurt, and there's a strong possibility that he could be hurt. But at the same time, don't you expect a little bit more from number 71?
I mean, you do. As Pittsburghers, we've come to expect a lot from Malkin over the years. When Crosby got hurt, he was the guy to step up. Even when Crosby wasn't hurt, you know, him and Crosby have been a deadly duo for so long. But you know, one thing you need to remember, he did come off a serious injury that he was on the bench for quite some time coming right before the playoffs. Yes, you know, that's no excuse for the way he plays, just like with Steph Curry in the NBA. You know, everyone will try to make excuses for him. You know, so it's no excuse. But I also do see really good things out of Malkin. I think that part of it's just his shots aren't going home and other people's are. But, like, there was one possession, I believe it was in the second period last night, when he deked out two different guys, brought it up behind the net, held possession for a really long time, skated around, and got a good pass off, and then Kunitz had a good shot, you know, in the crease, and his stick just snapped on him, and it just broke. And that could have been a goal that put the Penguins up 2-0 at the time, I believe, and that would have changed the entire game. And it was one of those plays where it was like, wow, it was really impressive for him to get that up. It just didn't work, you know, but part of it's just, you know, I think those things happen, man, you know, and I think that eventually, like with Crosby, you remember how, you know, in the Lightning series, you know, the one guy was like, oh, he's being lazy, like, this is a guy on NBC Sports, forgive me, I can't remember his name, but he was saying, oh, Crosby's being lazy, he needs to look at how the Lightning are playing and take notes on Dumoulin, and then all of a sudden, Crosby, you know, snaps the game-winning goal in overtime in 40 seconds. It's just like, you know, you get your shots and you get your shots. And in hockey, you know, it's not like I said, it's not like throwing a touchdown. It, you know, you have to get past the goalie, and sometimes goalies just make great plays to keep you out. But I think Malkin, he might have his time at some point, you know, in this series. But I don't think he's playing all that poorly. I just think he's not getting the opportunities just haven't fallen his way. But the opportunities are falling his team's way. So I'm okay with it. I'm not too disappointed in him.
Well, but I think the thing is for me is that if you look at the matchups, because when you get into these seven-game series, it's all about matchups, and it's going to be really interesting to see what they face in San Jose with San Jose getting last change. But Crosby's line seeing at least one of the top two defensive pairings and defensive forwards, and you have to think the HBK line is getting their second best, which means that Malkin's getting probably the third line, the checking line, he should be feasting on those guys. And like I said, maybe my expectations are really high for him because they are. But at the same time, come on. Like, I just don't get it. I don't understand what's going on. If he plays better, if he starts putting the puck in the back of the net, they sweep the San Jose Sharks, period. And
yeah,
I'm waiting
yeah.
for it. I think it could happen. You know, you can ask my wife as I sit down and watch the Penguins when they play. I'm like, I've got a feeling Gina's going to turn it on. He's going to get a big goal or something like that. And it's just not happened yet. Not saying it's not going to happen. I am kind of disappointed, but ultimately, I don't know. Now, let's get down to nuts and bolts here. They're up 2-0. They're going to San Jose. They get 2 days for travel, all that good stuff. And they're going to be playing Saturday. What is your prediction not only for the game on Saturday, but do they come back to Pittsburgh? And if so, what's the series when they do come back?
I haven't come back to Pittsburgh, Jeff. I think that they're going to win on Saturday. And then I think the Sharks are going to make a stand. I believe the next game would be on Monday. I think that they're gonna kind of snap into it, and they're gonna be able to put together a good game at home, just because their backs will be up against the ropes, and they're gonna try anything that they can to keep the series going. But I think once they come back to Pittsburgh for Game 5, it's gonna be over. The Penguins are gonna continue, and again, mind you, these last two wins that the Penguins have been late wins. You know, we had overtime last night with the Sheary goal, and in the first game, Bonino, you know, put home a goal. The go-ahead goal with like 2 minutes to go in the third. So it's not like the Penguins have blown them out, but they have outplayed them. I think the Penguins have by far outshot all of their opponents in these playoff games, and that has continued with the Sharks. So, I mean, I still think that they're going to dominate most of tomorrow night, and they'll be able to get enough goals. I just think that Game 4, you're going to see something out of the Sharks, or like the Penguins might slip up a little bit. And then Game 5, the Penguins are going to know that they want to win in front of their home crowd. It'd be really cool to see them win in front of the home crowd and to see Pittsburgh partying. Because guess what? If we get to the point where there's an elimination game and it's in Pittsburgh, Jeff, I won't be going to the game because those tickets are like $400. But I will be. I'll probably be out somewhere, you know, just to be here because I missed. I was here for the last one, but I was not drinking yet, so that I'm gonna be a part of. I want to be a part of that crowd this time around. But yeah, man, I gotta go. I got the Penguins win 4-1 in Game 5. Yeah, I got the. I just because you brought him up, I'm gonna say that Malkin's gonna be an X factor in Game 5 to help them get that last win.
Honestly, no one would be happier than me if Malkin does that. Yeah, I'm hard on the guy, and I'm gonna publicly call him out. It's not that I can do any better, but it's just the fact that I expect more. Now, for my prediction, I think the Penguins actually drop game three.
Okay.
I don't know why. The Sharks are good at home. Pittsburgh's always good for a dud in every playoff series. They had it every single stretch of the way, even against the Rangers in round one. They had a couple one against the Caps in round two. And then in game one, you think of game one against the Lightning. It was a really big dud. They're due for one of those. I'm going to think that's going to happen in game three. And then I think they come back and win on Monday and get the chance to come back. I originally said the Pens in six, but I could see it happening in five. The San Jose Sharks team, they're a team that lingers. I hate teams like that. They're getting good goaltending right now. Like you said, the Penguins have been the dominant team, not just the better team, the dominant team the entire series. And they've had lapses in the second period in game one. It was a little bit like a 5-minute stint in the third period in game two. They have these lapses, and you hope that they don't cash in when they have those. But I think that the Penguins might actually have to go back to San Jose to not clean it up. But I do see the Penguins winning, and that's what I had a couple questions today at work. What do you think the series is going to end? I don't care as long as the Penguins win more than the Sharks. As long as they win the Cup, that's all that matters. As Coach Tomlin says, style points don't matter as long as you win, and that's what's important. You know, the thing is I can see them sweeping. I say that very much tongue-in-cheek, and I am knocking on wood. I can see them going into San Jose, the way they're playing, as confident as they are, with Matt Murray, who we haven't talked about yet, playing great straight hockey. You can't stress how tough it is to only face 20 shots maybe in a game to stay in it. And I think most goalies would say they'd rather face 40 shots to stay in a rhythm. And depending on what kind of shots they are. But if he's playing it the way that he has been, I could see them winning four straight. Let's be honest. If this team is rolling right now, if they keep it going, it could happen. It could happen, absolutely. I think we have a caller, don't we?
Yes, we do. And it's a regular. He's kind of taken over from Vito, who we hope to see back sometime soon. But I'm going to bring my man in. Bryce from Brooklyn, how's it doing, brother?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing tonight?
We're doing great, man. We're sitting here enjoying some nice weather. I don't know where how it is in Brooklyn or Maryland, Jeff, but it's really nice in Pittsburgh these days.
Yeah, great weather up here. So I wanted to give you an analogy for the Penguins and the way they're playing right now, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. You know, on the offensive end, I should compare the way they're playing to some of those 90s Steelers teams. And what I mean is, on the offensive end, the shots on goal was like the running game, settling for field goals. You're not getting touchdowns, but you're pounding them into submission. Like after three quarters, Barry Bananas Foster has 21 carries for 120 yards, and you've kicked four field goals, and you're starting to wear down the other team. Because on the defensive end, with the way the Pens are playing defense, it's like they're getting five sacks, and the other team can't convert on third down, so they're controlling the games. So they might end up winning the game 16-6 or 13-3, but the score is not indicative to the dominance. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, I definitely do like the analogy, especially the one about the offense. I think that you watch the Penguins and you say, man, they're dominant. They're all over the ice. They're flying around. Every single line is just looking like they're potentially good score, but they're not. They're not cashing on these chances. And it reminds me of, you don't have to go back to the 90s. You can go back 2 years ago when the Penguins had the Steelers had one of the worst red zone offenses in the National Football League, and it seemed like I would often tell friends that I was watching games that I'd rather them be at the 30-yard line than inside the 20.
Right.
It just seemed like they got discombobulated. They're better off scoring outside the red zone than they are in. It's very, very similar. I think it's a great analogy. The defense for the Penguins has been outstanding. You lose Trevor Bailey. He's such a big part of that defense. He's so quick. He's very good with the puck. He's very knowledgeable, very smart player. You lose all those minutes, and you're wondering what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, Ben Lovejoy, Ian Cole, Schultz, Mata, they all start stepping up. This is a good team. And I say that emphasis on team. This is a great hockey team. It's not just Crosby and Malkin leading the way. It's everybody. They're getting goals from Rust, Cheery. I'm waiting for Kunockel to get one. I've got this feeling that he's going to score a goal. I don't know when. He just always seems to be around the puck, get that last baby Penguin another playoff goal in the final. What do you think, Chris?
You know, I'm with you. It would be nice to see Kunockel in. But, I mean, it's like I said, it's a little different than football for me, because part of the reason the Steelers weren't scoring in the red zone back then, because they weren't coordinated. They were working with Mike Wallace as the number one receiver back then. And, when you're looking at that kind of an offense, the reason they were scoring from so far back is because they had big guys that could make big plays and make you miss. But Ben Roethlisberger wasn't really doing a good job dissecting defenses. I don't think I'm not sure what the parallel would be that to hockey, but I feel like they're getting off plays. They've had a good opportunity. Just a puck bounces this way, puck bounces that way, or great saves made sometimes. And, I mean, this is playoff hockey. Every team is a great team, or at least a good team. And they got people that are going to be able to step up and make plays. And we've seen that with goalies. I don't think it's necessarily the same thing as that, because I attribute those red zone problems to a still maturing Ben Roethlisberger and, players on the Steelers, skill position for the Steelers that were players that were not 100% there yet, or not really the players that you wanted to have in the red zone. Because to me, Mike Wallace wasn't a red zone guy at all. He was a speedster. He was a good receiver to have on the field, but you rarely throw a toss up to him or expect him to run a super sharp route to shake somebody loose when you were inside the 20-yard line. But still a good player to have. But that's just my take. I don't think it's the same thing, but I do understand the frustration, because it does seem like, I mean, when you look at these shot differentials over these games, I mean, the Penguins I think have dominated every series in shots in the Stanley Cup playoffs, yet they've won so many games by the hair of their teeth, the skin of their teeth, I guess you'd say. But I don't think it's the same thing, but I do understand the frustration because I've been watching it and like, come on, can we just get a laugh? Or, you know, I would so like to have just a game where they just completely dominate, win like 3-0 or 4-0 or 4-1, and it's like all the way through, like, you know, they have it. But at the same time, I'll take wins however I get them.
Yeah, I mean, I also think too, I mean, look at the way that they're winning. You know, guys playing all-around games.
Yep.
Of course, like Jeff said, you'd like to get more out of Malkin. But we haven't even really seen that Crosby offensive explosion or that Malkin offensive explosion. So if we can get one of those on this road trip, we'll be able to wrap this thing up in five at the very least, because – those guys still haven't gone off offensively in terms of goal scoring, and were able to win hockey games.
Yeah, you're waiting for it. You're waiting for that game where they absolutely just, the volcano explodes. You feel like it's building up. They've had those games in every single series where they put up four or more goals, and you're waiting for it to happen. And the thing is, it's not like a series where they're running into a team that is just, it reminds me of the New Jersey Devils that run that trap. It's just so difficult to score, especially if you're down in the game. The San Jose Sharks are going to be exposed because of the way they like to push the pace, especially with their blue liners, their defensemen. They've had the opportunity. They're on the cusp of a big game. And you listen to all the analysts, whether it's Jeremy Roenick, whether it's Mike Milbury, who's been very complimentary of the Penguins, which is really weird. They're all saying the same thing. The Penguins could be up 5-1 by now, or 5-0. They're getting those quality chances. You feel like they're going to cash in at some point. I hope it soon, because if they do, lights out. I think if they win Game 3, shoot, I don't know, they might sweep, because I don't know if San Jose can take that punch. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean.
Oh yeah, go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I know exactly what you mean. And I mean, when we're talking about Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, I think one thing that I heard from Sullivan is that he doesn't want to go back. Like, he doesn't want to go back to the old pens. And part of those old pens was relying on them to do that. They have their system where they're spreading the opportunities around, and you've seen success with that. I mean, you know, it was always fun to see, you know, Crosby or Malkin explode like that. But, you know, I'd rather have a team that they're working into a system and that they're able to make really good plays on top of other really good plays from everyone else, instead of it just being, hey, we're just going to try and force these opportunities to these guys and just keep hoping they can put it down. Because then, you know, other teams can focus more on these players. But, I mean, the way they're playing now, I mean, the HBK line, you know, you have to account for them, which you can't put like your best defenders on them all the time, because then you open up Crosby for chances. And while Malkin has had better matchups than he used to in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I think that that's an advantage that you get. And I mean, Rust, I think, has benefited from it. You know, we saw him have a big game 7 against the Lightning. You know, I think that's part of the strategy, is that they're spreading the wealth around. And, I mean, and we've even seen it just with how Malkin and Crosby both have recognized the attention that they draw. I think back in Game 6, right before one of our more recent shows, we talked about how Crosby just completely faked on a shot, and it drew everyone's attention, and he passed it off and got the assist. And I think the same thing goes with Malkin. He attracts a lot of attention, and they know that. They know that they don't need to be the one that takes the big shot. Just create the opportunity, play within the scheme that the team has, and get the job done. So I don't care where it comes from, long as we keep getting them and we keep winning.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I do want to give the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Sharks credit. You know, the Penguins have run up against two very good goalies. Vasilevsky is a beast. I mean, that guy's coming. He's going to be a beast for a long time. And Jones is playing outstanding hockey. I mean, 28 saves on 30 shots. That's winning performance. So, you know, it's not like the Penguins haven't been trying. I mean, I remember back in the 90s, man. I hope I'm a casual hockey fan, so I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. But Van Breesbrook from Florida. I mean, that guy was just a wall. I mean, he's going up against titans like Jaromir Jagr and Mario Lemieux and just holding his own. So sometime you just go up against when you get that hot goalie, it's going to be tough to score. So, you know, I do give credit for the number of shots on goal. I'm just hoping that we can get that explosion from Crosby or Malkin.
I hope so too, Bryce. I really do. You got anything else, Pittsburgh-related, before we let you go?
Just a comment about the Steelers. You know, I'm really interested to see what Eli Rogers can do. You know, you're hearing good things about him in OTAs, and I just wanted to ask you guys, do you think Eli Rogers can make an impact this year, whether it be on special teams or as the fourth, fifth receiver?
You know, this is a topic we were going to bring up anyways. We might as well do it now.
I was going to say,
I don't know if a young receiver, even Eli Rogers, who's been in the system, obviously he got hurt last year in training camp, other than special teams, I don't know if any young receiver, that includes DeMarcus Ayers, the seventh-round pick, is going to be able to come in and actually contribute. Sammy Coates might be the only exception, just because of his pedigree, because he was in the system. He wasn't injured like Rogers is. I mean, you watch these players, whether it's Martavis Bryant early on in his rookie season, even Antonio Brown when he was a rookie, his first few years in the league. It takes time. And it takes time for Roethlisberger to trust a receiver. And that makes me say, you know, I love all these OTA stories and the training camp stories and the players that, you know, seemingly jump off the page of people and they fall in love with these guys. But ultimately what it comes down to is, are they going to be able to contribute? Right now I'm going to say Eli Rogers, unless he's a kick returner, punt returner, I'm going to say no. And I hope that I'm wrong, but it's the same with Shaquem, as Bob Pompeiani calls him. I don't know. I don't think either of these guys are. Same with Harris, the rookie. It's just, to me, it's a sophisticated offense. It's a very trusting offense. And with Ben Roethlisberger, you've seen it before. I remember a play. I can't remember who they played. They ran a wheel route for out of the backfield with Dree Archer, and he was wide open. I mean, no one picked him up out of the backfield. And Roethlisberger didn't throw it. And it's not that he didn't see it. I don't think he trusted him to make a play. Roethlisberger, more so maybe than any other quarterback in the league that I've watched for any significant amount of time, has to trust the players in the field before he's going to throw the football. So in my opinion, I'm going to say no, that I don't think Eli Rogers, he might make the team, but in terms of making an impact outside of special teams, I'll put my money on no. What do you think, Chris?
I mean, one, I think the situation with Dree Archer was also because Archer had proven himself to be unreliable at that point in Pittsburgh. But also, I mean, I do agree. Ben needs a sense of trust with you. And right now, though Martavis Bryant is, you know, in the pen for smoking weed, the football pen, even though he's, I still think that there's too much talent at the wide receiver position for Eli Rogers to make the cut. You still got Antonio Brown. You still got Marcus Wheaton. I think Sammy Coates is going to be a big name this year as like a, you know, sort of like a guy that we're proud to have on the team as like a third or fourth option, and he makes some big plays for us, and we see his raw speed a little bit. I think Darius Heyward-Bey, he's still the man that's really good. Yes, John Jaso tying it up in the bottom or the top of the ninth. I'm sorry, I'm keeping an eye on the Buccos game, man, that's so clutch. Anyway, but when I'm looking at the wide receiver position, I just think that Eli Rogers is going to be an odd man out. Shaquem Phillips, you know, and it's funny, it's not just Bob Pompeiani. Like, I was at a preseason game last year, and, like, the announcer was saying his name wrong. I'm like, does nobody know that his name is Shaquem and this is, like, a very normal name? that whole situation was just bizarre to me. I also think that, side note, that maybe Shaquem was having a little fun with them, like someone didn't know his name, so he told him something. Because if you remember, the Niners having a running back, Kevin Barlow, way back when he was from the University of Pittsburgh, and he played for my father, and so, you know, we knew him when he was, we talked to him, and we asked, like, why do they call you Keevan? Because every time he stepped up in college and he was being announced, they would call him Kevin Barlow. And he said it was just one day someone asked him how to pronounce his name, so he made a joke, and that stuck with him all the way to the pros. So I think that might be what happened to Shaquem or Shaq'em Phillips, is that someone was just, you know, he might have been having fun in that past round. But I think that Shaquem Phillips fits the mold of the type of receiver that Pittsburgh wants. But also, I think that people should really not sleep on DeMarcus Ayers. If he has a good camp and if he proves to be a reliable returner, they may give him the fifth wide receiver option because he's a shifty guy, and he could be a person that Pittsburgh calls upon. I just think that Eli Rogers, he doesn't have the frame of Phillips, and if he can, and Ayers was specifically drafted so he could be a return man. If he can beat out Ayers for the return spot, maybe. But as of now, I think Eli Rogers is going to be like a practice squad guy. Unless someone gets injured. And if, I think if one person gets injured, like a Wheaton or a Bay, or, you know, God forgive us, if Antonio Brown get hurt again. But, you know, I think if someone gets hurt, then you'll see him come up in the fifth spot. But that's my stance on that.
Well, you know what, Chris? Let me say something that no one else is willing to say. And it's about the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers going into 2016. Everyone is banking all this stuff on Sammy Coates. He's not a lock. Not so much to make the team. I think he is a lock to make the team. But in terms of productivity, he's not a lock to do much. I mean, let's be honest. He had one good game last year, which was in the divisional game in Denver. And what did he have? Three catches? Now, some of those were great catch and runs, you know, and he showed off his burst and he showed off his athleticism. That's such a small sample size. And so if I'm looking at anyone to step up this year, it's Marcus Wheaton. I think he's more of a proven commodity. And then Sammy Coates, hey, I hope that he does well. But at this time, I think people need to pump the brakes a little bit on this kid because he's still very young, he's still very raw, and we'll see if he can actually live up to the upside that a lot of people are predicting.
Go ahead, Bryce.
You know, I have to agree with that. I think Sammy Coates definitely has showed, you know, some nice things in that playoff game. And I think if you're looking for him to come on and get you, you know, conservatively 30 to 40 grabs, maybe more, 45 grabs, I think that's good to think about. But I think one of the keys to that is looking at Ladarius Green. I think the reason why you're bringing a guy like him is you know what you're getting with Martavis being out. You need to fill the tight end spot. And you bring a guy in that, you know, could be a good blocker, but is more known for pass receiving to offset the fact that you're losing a very dynamic down-the-field threat like Martavis Bryant. You look at your receivers, you think you can get some nice production from that group. We're not counting Antonio Brown. We know what he does. But when you add the tight end who could be getting more touches, I think that balances out your offense. If there was another veteran tight end, I think, on the roster that was more of a pass receiver, then maybe you would have seen Ladarius Green, but maybe they go in the draft. But because they had young guys, I think Jesse James and Ladarius provide you ways to get down the field that offset what you miss when you lose Martavis Bryant. That's just my thought on it.
No, I definitely agree with you, man. I think Ladarius Green is going to be a serious weapon at the tight end position. I do also recognize that Coates isn't a lock. I'm just saying from the perspective of making the roster for Eli Rogers, it's going to be a tough look for him to beat out Coates. Coates is a third round draft pick. He's a really good athlete. He runs well. He stepped up in the playoffs a little bit for the team, not a whole lot, but you know, like you said, he had three catches, good catch and runs against a tough defense. That, I mean, came out and shut down Cam Newton and Tom Brady, you know, after that. I think Coach is going to win it. I don't think he's going to have a super year, but I think he's going to have a good year for a guy that's in this cluster of receivers. But it won't just be his own work that does it. I think it's also – I'm not saying it's just his raw skill. I'm also saying because of the culture of wide receivers that has developed for the Pittsburgh Steelers over time. I mean, you have Antonio Brown, you've had a wide receiver department basically that has churned out really good years from receivers, you know, going back, you know, for a long time. Especially ever since Hines Ward entered, it's been a different mentality for how Steelers wide receivers are supposed to play. Not necessarily not knock you out, drag you out like Ward did. but I'm here to make the play. I'm here to lead my team. You know, I have to set the bar for everyone else. And Mike Wallace didn't really carry that on from Ward, but Antonio Brown certainly picked it up. And, you know, his work ethic, I'm telling you, I went to Steelers camp one time, and as soon as the entire camp was over, he was working with the practice squad wide receiver guys to show them, this is how I get in on my break. This is how I do this. This is how I do that. And, you know, it was really cool seeing that. His work ethic bleeds on to other people, and I think it's gonna bleed on to Coates and Wheaton and Hayward Bay, and who knows, maybe Eli Rogers, Phillips, or Ayers. So that's what I think about that.
Well, it really kind of goes back to what they think they're going to get, because if you look at the four, I mean, to me, there are four locks to the roster. You've got Brown, Coates, Hayward Bay, and Wheaton. Those are your top four guys. But that fifth spot is kind of up for grabs. So what kind of complements your roster? Obviously, special teams is going to be important. But remember, Hay Bay gives you a lot of special teams from your wide receiving core. So you might be able to get away with a guy, even if he doesn't give you too much return ability. But if you feel that he can come in spot sets and give you a couple catches during the game or maybe take the top off the coverage, maybe that fits into who dresses for that week and who doesn't.
I agree. I think that's what's going to do it. Now, Bryce, we do gotta move on. We gotta get some other things done before our show is done tonight. But we thank you for calling in as always. We appreciate your insight on the thing and the conversation that you bring to the table. Is there anything you'd like to say before you go?
Man, just thank you guys. I appreciate calling in. You guys do a great job. Looking forward to more shows. Hopefully the Pens can wrap this thing up soon. Keep it going.
Yes, indeed. Thanks again, Bryce. Before we talk about our Pittsburgh Pirates, who are currently battling it out in the bottom of the ninth, 3-3 against the Miami Marlins to try and split the series, we're going to have a word from our sponsor. And if you've been listening, you know that our sponsor is Frank Walker Law, a Pittsburgh attorney. He's ranked in the top 100 across the nation as trial attorneys, gives you real talk, real experience, real results. Frank Walker, he addresses many different things. He specializes in criminal law, personal injury, and many others. And he's right here in Pittsburgh addressing Western Pennsylvania cases as well as Northern West Virginia. But we get a word from our sponsor, Frank Walker Law.
Smart or stupid? Those strobing lights in your rear view? That flashlight shining in your face?
License, registration, and insurance, please.
The little adventure you're about to have with this guy?
I'll need you to step out of the vehicle, please.
Okay, so you've done something stupid. Fix it with a smart move.
For DUI or criminal defense, call Frank Walker of frankwalkerlaw.com. He knows his way around a courtroom. 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805 or frankwalkerlaw.com.
And as always, we appreciate Frank Walker Law, a fan of this show, and a loyal listener, and a big Pittsburgher. We're going to talk about some Pittsburgh Pirates before we go today. Right now, they're duking it out with the Marlins. Before we talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates, I want to bring this up just because I thought this was kind of silly in the sense that I really didn't care about this topic, but people seem to be losing their minds. Jeff, have you seen this nonsense about the gorilla that got killed in Cincinnati, or he was in the zoo and the kid fell in the pit and all that?
I did see that, yes.
Did you see that Vince Williams said?
Yeah. I did. I didn't write the article on it because I just felt that was not necessary. A lot of people were upset about that whole situation. As a person that runs the website, I just chose to stay away from that. I could see the humor in it because I know that Vince Williams, I've spoken with him before individually, especially through social media. He's not that kind of guy where he's going to do something he's not going to say something that's that malicious or that hateful. So for me, I could see the humor in it, but I know that a lot of people didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with your decision not to write it because it's really not necessarily news. I just thought it was something like, that's silly. And the fact that people would get upset about that, this is one of those situations where I understand when people get upset about people, you know, crying about political correctness. Political correctness to me is usually something that's good to have because it means that you're respecting people, other people. Like if you make a racist joke, it's like, you know, like, oh, you're being PC because you don't want me to let me be racist. No, that's that's not political correctness. That's me trying to say don't be a jerk. But as far as, like, you know, this is a gorilla. This is an animal. This is not a human being. And yes, it's unfortunate that it you know, it had to get killed to protect the child. But at the end of the day, it's like, are we really losing our mind about this? You know, there's a lot bigger things out there. And I think Vince Williams, with his tweet, when I saw it, I was like, that's, you know, not that I want to make light of it, but at the same time I do, because your people are paying way too much attention and caring way too much about, oh, what could have happened to this gorilla. But if any of you are wondering what we're talking about, Vince Williams tweeted out that, you know, it maybe was a good thing that the gorilla got killed because, you know, now he doesn't have to live in Cincinnati anymore. And that's the joke. But people obviously didn't like the joke. They got really upset about it. He had to remove the tweet. And he even said people need to lighten up. It was just a joke. I don't wish harm upon animals and all that good stuff. But, yeah, I wanted to catch your insight on that, because that whole thing, I'm just like, this has gone way too far. But moving out of that, Jeff, we're going to talk about your favorite team, the team that you believe in more than the Pittsburgh Steelers, more than the Pittsburgh Penguins, more than Jesus Christ himself. You believe in some Pittsburgh Pirates. How do you feel about the Pirates? They dropped the series coming into this, and now they're struggling with the Marlins. What do you see with the Pirates right now?
It's just more of the same. They're inconsistent. It's what we've been saying all year round. It's what we've been saying on the show since we started it a few weeks ago, about a month ago, actually. It's everything. It's consistency in pitching. It's consistency in hitting. Now it's even some consistency in fielding. They've been making more errors, which certainly is not a positive. It's frustrating. It's really frustrating for me when I see the pitching struggle and Jameson Taillon and a couple other guys are down in the minor league system, basically just wasting innings, wasting pitches, and the Pirates aren't calling them up. And we talked about it last week, and we talked about Ryan Vogelsong's injury and what that could mean for the rotation. It hasn't changed yet. I don't see it change anytime soon. They got a great start from Jeff Locke, who went through a Maddux, which is throwing under 100 pitches, and a complete game victory of the first of his career. But hitting, I mean, Andrew McCutchen's still hitting .257. He left the game today with a thumb injury. Francisco Cervelli, he is struggling now. He's down below .250. He left today with another injury. He left also with an injury today. This Miami series has been dreadful. I hope that they can pull out this win tonight. They're headed into extra innings, I know. But if they can split 2-2 with these guys, let me say this. If it weren't for Gregory Polanco, Lord knows where this team would be right now. What are your thoughts on the Pirates? Mine haven't changed, to be honest.
I mean, I feel like this is what I was expecting. You know, they had a really good stretch of like 10 to 15 games, a really good homestand, and, you know, then they went back on the road, and you're starting to see some of the wear and tear, and you're starting to see some of those key players go down. Cutch leaving the game is big. You know, Polanco taking a hit. It's funny, well, not funny, but weird that both Polanco and Cervelli have now taken shots to the foot from, you know, pitches that just went off track. And now they're both hurt. But like you said, I mean, Polanco is really keeping this team afloat. What does he have, like 8 homers right now? And he's hitting like .320. Like, the guy is playing lights out, and he's really consistent out in right field. He's someone that I still think is developing. Like, he's still not all the way there yet, and that's scary because he's one of the better players on the team and one of the better outfielders in the National League. So, I mean, there's a lot of promise still with this team, and I think that we haven't seen their best baseball yet, and that should frighten people down the stretch, because you know, let this team catch fire. You know, it's June. This is right on time when they catch on. Let this team catch fire and get on a hot streak and start beating some juggernauts when those series come up. And I think it's good. I think they're going to be a really good position. Right now, though, they're still in that spot. They're in a good shot for the wild card chase. They can make some moves. I just, you know, I'm still waiting for, like you said, Taillon to come up, maybe Glasnow to come up. I think Boscon's done a really good job for it when limited what he's been allowed to do. But, you know, Nicasio, like you saw today, you know, he's not a starter. He's a reliever. And no matter how much you keep trying to make him a starter for the time being, because you just think that, you know, you don't, well, you're afraid that you'll have to send Tyon back down, you know, if you bring him up right now. I mean, it's like, come on, we've been waiting for 3 years for this now. So I'm with you on that. Bring up Tyon, bring up somebody, and at least give him a shot, see what happens. At least, you know, start the process of, like, putting them in the bullpen and giving them a few innings so that we can see what they do. We can move a little forward with this, because this team needs some additional consistent starters. I think Jeff Locke, he's become a guy that I'm okay with having in the lineup, you know, in like the third or fourth spot. After Liriano and Cole get their games, and he seems like he can occasionally put in a decent game. Now, you still want someone to go in ahead of him, but with our lineup right now, it's like, okay, this guy can come in, provide some good innings, and keep us in a ball game. But also, we've seen this from Jeff Locke before. I think we saw it 3 years ago. It is his first season in the majors. He had a great first half of the season, and then he returned from the All-Star break and just, well, crapped the bed. You know, he just fell apart like that James McDonald guy did, you know, when he used to be a pitcher for the Pirates. So I'm taking my Jeff Locke happiness with a grain of salt, because I know that can quickly change at any point. But at the same time, I'm also happy to see him pitching well. But let's add some fires to this rotation, man. Nice can be a good, you know, end of the rotation guy. You know, Locke can have that. Let's get Tyon in here. You know, maybe Glass now at some point in the season. But I'm with you. We got to start bringing in the youth movement. You know, much like the Pens did, man. Look what the baby Penguins are doing. You know, hitting game winning overtime shots and stuff. We could do that with the Pirates. And then who knows? Who knows, Jeff? We could get the ultimate trifecta in this year. This is the season, man. The Penguins are going to win the Cup. The Pirates are going to win the World Series. I'm calling it right now. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are winning the Super Bowl. No city's ever going to seen something like this, and it's about to happen. You're about to witness history, Jeff. Hear me now.
Well, I know we're short on time, but I in the first segment I called out Evgeny Malkin. In the second segment, I kind of shining the light on Sammy Coates. And I'm going to do it again in the third segment with the Pirates. Andrew McCutchen getting hurt could be the best thing for this baseball team right now, period. Why? Not only is he struggling at the plate, he's striking out at a tremendous rate. He's on pace to set a personal record for strikeouts. He's not batting for average. Power is kind of there. He's hit 9 home runs this year. I have to be honest, right now out of the three outfielders, he's the worst of the three. You hate to say that about a former MVP, but Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco are playing better than him right now. So you put James Joyce out there, who, by the way, had a huge double tonight against the Marlins.
Yes,
they
he
got
did.
Within one. He's hitting the crap out of the ball right now. So you know what? Put him out there. And if he's not, put Sean Rodriguez out there, because he's been playing well, too, in spot play.
He's been playing for – yes, he has.
Yeah, so you look at it and say, McCutchen going down, maybe it energizes McCutchen if he's out for like 6 or 7 games, or even if it's just 2 or 3 games, and kind of gives him a break, lets him reset his mind, gives these other guys a chance to come in and do some mashing, do some raking, all those baseball terms that I love saying, because they used to say it all the time as a player. But still, see what happens. It's going to mix things up. You're going to have Chris Duer behind the plate. We'll see if Cervelli's injury is serious. I think that's more serious for the team than McCutchen. It's hard to say, but Andrew McCutchen is not the team's best outfielder right now, from both offense and defensive standpoint. So you can chew on that for a little bit, Chris. But that's the truth. That is the honest truth.
Well, I'm with you. Do you think, last question before we sign up, do you think that has anything to do with him hitting in the 2 spot and, you know, any weirdness to his vote?
I think that him hitting in the 2 spot, he would have been acclimated to that by now, especially if the people hitting behind him are hitting. He's going to see better pitches. I think his approach is what's killing me. In the past, you've seen McCutchen get up there, and he's reading the pitches well. He's clearly in tune with what the pitcher's trying to do. He kind of looks like he's guessing up there. And when you see that, even from the best players in the world, that's bad. That's trouble. So I think that, like I said, a little break, a little time off. You know, they're going to play the Los Angeles A's here coming up, and you don't want to miss any time there. But at the same time, you want to get him right, because you need him to get back on track. Even if he doesn't hit 300, even if he's up around 275, 280, 290, that's where you need him. If he can consistently be there, it's going to be a big boost to this lineup, a big boost to the team, and we hope that gets him going. But as of right now, McCutchen being out of the lineup, people should not be freaking out about that.
We won't freak about that. And we ask you not to freak out when we tell you that tonight's show is over. But we hope that you've enjoyed it. Please rate us on iTunes. Give us good ratings, not bad ratings, please. We hope that you're enjoying the show. We're glad for our regular caller, Bryce from Brooklyn. You can always call in at 347-850-8581 to join the show. Check us out on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. We got a lot of good content, film room studies, article discussions, just everything that you could possibly want for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And get ready, folks. You know, it's going to be a hockey night in Pittsburgh on Saturday night, though they will be away. Everywhere in Pittsburgh is going to be a buzz watching the Pittsburgh Penguins take on the San Jose Sharks for Game 3. Jeff, any final words?
No, I say, hey, Berg proud, baby. Go Pittsburgh.
Berg.